Welcome to the Shake Podcast, powered by Sports Cannabis, and I'm your host, Ryan Purvis. We have entered Season 7 with a whole new lineup and new guests while still taking a deep dive into all things cannabis and the representatives pushing the industry forward. Today, athletes around the world are using their platforms to normalize the sports cannabis conversation and to break the stigma. Stay up to date with the latest in sports cannabis news and learn more about athletes leading the charge on www.sportscannabis.ca. The trend towards normalizing cannabis is not specific to one country. Join the movement and let's grow the community together. Today, we are joined by a good friend and self-made man, Gabe Wetzel. Today, Gabe's leading the charge in the cannabis industry. I'm super fortunate to first cross paths with Gabe. We met at a Trek event downtown Ottawa, where Gabe and his team hosted a Budtender product knowledge session. And let me tell you, it was so much more than that. I've done them, I've been there, and just meeting Gabe and his team really just brought more to the table. Thanks for joining the show today. Before we get started and take a deep dive into all things cannabis, the medicinal and the recreational side of things, Gabe, please introduce yourself and give our listeners a high-level overview of your cannabis journey to date.
Thank you, Ryan. Very happy to be here and finally participate with you on one of these things. A little bit about myself. My background's in bioresource engineering from McGill University, where I specialized in post-harvest processing, large-scale precision agriculture, and renewable energies. Over the last 7 years, I do and have always worked for myself, both in and outside of the cannabis industry. In the last 7 years, I've been very heavily involved in legalization and recreational launches. During 2018, I represented a very large LP carrying their products to the provinces, doing the supply chain, the listing, packaging, sourcing, label design, and compliance, all the way through to the end sale point. You know, barcodes were a nightmare for everyone at the time. And I think I still sleep with them. I should have one tattooed on the back of my head by now. As you said, I've launched over 50 unique products on the market, anywhere from flower, beverages, topicals, concentrates, pre-rolls, you name it. It always brings a smile on my face to go into a store and see somebody pitch me one of the products that I launched, because it just makes me feel good in my heart that, you know, something that I care about and has made a difference in my life really speaks and cares with others.
Yeah, you know what? It's nice that you share that, because I know a lot of people in this industry, it's not just a job, you know, like eat, sleep, breathe it. I used to say it for hockey, and I'm going to say it for my work, for the passion of cannabis. And I know you share the same passion for the plant. And I couldn't imagine to really kind of see a product come from an idea and into that retailer and then into a consumer's hands. Just to kind of keep it kind of more on the sports side of things right now, to dive right into it, what's the connection between cannabis and exercise or sport look like for you?
You know, I was always very heavy in the athlete growing up, swimming, ski racing in high school. I played competitive football and wrestling for all 4 years. Not saying that our teams were very good or I was any good, but I was very involved and I love sports. I always had to be moving and be active. Funny enough, I never tried cannabis once until university. I came to school, went there, and about a month in, you know, everyone's hanging out outside, said, let's try, let's see. Probably the first night in my life I ever slept for more than 4 hours. I've always had pills or something to help me sleep growing up, and large set insomnia. You know, I'd try to go to bed at 10, fall asleep at 3, be up at 6. It was like that my whole life. Cannabis, university, boom, game changing. Just like that, it was incredible for me. And I always wanted to push myself after that and see, why is this making such a difference for me? Why have I not been told this? And why has it been ostracized my whole life? So it was a very eye-opening experience, to which quickly dovetailed to me getting my medical prescription and pushing myself into the industry.
Yeah. And that's it. Again, it's nice to share that connection to the plant. Obviously sleep is a huge thing in both medicinal and the recreational market. I mean, we can't use the term sleep. We usually use rest or unwind of such, but a lot of people, we know this, are using cannabis because of sleep. Did you ever see a connection at that point during university while you're, you know, active, playing some sports, like on the recovery kind of relief side?
For sure. I totally did. I mean, I stopped competitive sports entering university. I wanted to focus on my degree. Unlike you, I wasn't a high level athlete going anywhere. I was the small guy on the field who got mangled by everybody. But I kept going to the gym. I kept pushing myself. I did CrossFit growing up and I did it throughout university. And I loved a little bit of a smoke before going in, just focused me and really allowed me to achieve new heights in what I could move and do. And then afterwards, exactly for the recovery, as you're saying, it really did allow me to sleep and rest and unwind much more efficiently and effectively, to the point where I woke up feeling refreshed every day and I'd go about doing the courses I should be doing or trying to get to the classes I needed to be at. But it was a game changer for sure. And, you know, I love seeing other people's statements on that and how much it really helps and benefits their life. I'm a firm believer that we all use this medically for some sort of reason. It's just, how do we quantify that?
Right, right. And you know what? There was a lack of context there on my end, because they say recovery and relief. And you know what? Our body does the most of that during sleep. So it just shows us how important that kind of aspect of, let's say, our day is. And I think a lot of us need to dive deeper in making sure that we do get that proper rest to make sure that our body is well recovered and ready to go the next day. So I want to see what your pivot into cannabis looked like. Going from university into the cannabis space, what did that kind of look like for you? And what was that aha moment?
I mean, the cannabis space at that time, I've been a medical patient since about 2012, 2013. So I've been a medical patient for a few years before I transitioned into the industry. That was still pre-legalization. So it was a very cookie cutter industry at the time. You grow, you package it. When someone orders online or via phone, you put it in a box and you ship it to them directly. You know, it was all about patient acquisition at the time. There's very few LPs, very little product. I remember sitting on the phone waiting, you know, you're a caller 400 in the line to get your product because there's such a shortage of cannabis at the LPs. So working in one was a very fun time, working on the supply chain and seeing how it was really managed on the inside, because with my background in precision agriculture and post-harvest processing, no, I saw it. Instead of a tomato, this was cannabis, a pharmaceutical plant. So it wasn't that far of a reach from what a lot of the industries or agricultural systems currently were out there. It was just a whole new dynamic and component under a very heavily regulated industry and very heavily governed body that, to be honest, didn't really know what they were doing at the front end. But they set the regulations going, we will repeal what we don't need in the future. I have to give Health Canada full credit for that. They've always made it easier along the process.
I want to dive into it personally for you. Obviously, coming from a biosource engineering background and jumping into cannabis, how was that transition and how applicable was it? Because obviously cannabis was so new, but like, was that a conversation to be had at school? And were you able to bring a lot of that new skill set into the cannabis space?
Funny enough, right after I left, one of my professors was the first, I believe he was the first professor, first university in Canada to get a grant to grow hemp on the campus farm.
No
way. Kudos to him. And I still want to reach back out to him and discuss and giggle about this. A lot of the things were directly translatable. I mean, you see a lot of people, or you saw and still do see a lot of people in cannabis with microbiology and plant botany backgrounds, because this is still a living plant. We're talking about soil, we're talking about microbes, fungi, aflatoxin, bacteria, heavy metals absorption through the root, evapotranspiration, plant sweat, cannabis plant sweat, that's evapotranspiration. So all of a sudden we have all these agricultural and botanical knowledge spaces being direct applicable to cannabis. And, you know, it was a whole new learning curve for everyone, because you have this union of the science side with the traditional cultivation methodologies, and people could say, this is why it works that way, or this is why that's not a safe methodology. So it was really interesting and fun to see the shift of the industry going from pre-legalization to post-legalization based on the science inside of it.
I want to jump into flower. Myself being in the recreational space and seeing the consumer just kind of shift to that small batch, hand trimmed, hand dried, craft flower, those exotics. I always like chatting about it because it's just such a shift from that value over to that craft. And people really now, they want to smoke good weed, and it's our duty to provide good weed in this legal landscape. So I want you to kind of just touch on craft flower, you know, what it is, the craft label itself, and maybe just the consumers transitioning in the last 6 to 12 months.
I'm sure many people will disagree with how I view this. There's a lot of logistical nightmares to launching a small batch craft product in the industry. realistically, to be very blunt, an LP sells the product to the province anywhere from $2 to $3 a gram. Anything more than that, and you're laughing all the way to the bank. It costs an LP about $1 a gram to grow, sometimes more depending on the grow system. Pre-legalization, it was $2 a gram. $1 a gram to grow, and you're selling it anywhere from $2 to $3. You have about 50 cents in packaging in there. That's putting it in the jar, putting the label, your labor to package it. Then you put it in a master case, you put the case on a pallet, you wrap it all up, you label it all. Then shipping and C of A's are the two nasty items for every LP. A certificate of analysis, which is your documentation that says this product is safe. That will have your potencies, your terpenes, the proof that you don't have any microbes, that's fungi, bacteria, salmonella on it, E. coli. The proof that there's no heavy metals, that's lead, cadmium, arsenic, mercury. And then you also test for water availability because it must be below a certain moisture content and aflatoxins. So there's a whole bunch of testing requirements. This test alone, all of these cost $1,400, regardless of the size of your batch. So you have $1,400 there. You have $1,400 to ship it on a pallet in a secure shipment with environmental control to the province. So if you're selling 5,000 units at a time of a small batch craft to the province, that's $2,800 in C of A and shipping alone. That's 50 cents a gram. You're already paying $1 a gram to cultivate, another 50 to package and get it ready to go. And then you're paying 50 to C of A and ship it. So it's $2 of your sale, which is anywhere from two to three. So there are really low margins in craft cannabis. And it is painful for LPs because you go through so much time and labor and energy to list it with the province, to get your barcodes together, to go through all this stuff. And then you're at the mercy of what they pay you, which the prices are set because of taxes and the push to disrupt the illicit market. Coupled with that, craft cannabis or cannabis in general, people want fresh. They want available terpenes. Well, the moment you harvest a plant, you have to cure it, dry it. That takes anywhere from 7 to 10 days, depending on the process, sometimes 5 if you're good. From there, you have to trim it. So you take it off of the stem and you take the leaves off. That's a couple of days if your production planning is fast. From there, you put it in a bulk bag and you send a sample to the lab. That lab will tell you the C of A information we just covered. That is another 7 to 14 days. Typically, it's about 10 days, business days. Mm-hmm. So we're already at 2 to 3 weeks just to tell you if your product is safe for sale. You won't know until that C of A comes back if you're allowed to sell it. This is all flower in general. So
this is before we even get to that kind of craft flower, right?
So you have 3 to 4 weeks from the moment you cut the plant down to the moment it's really packed and on the route to the provinces. And in there, you don't know if it's actually good to sell or not until your C of A comes. Right. And then you print your labels, you package it. And so there's a lot of linear steps that can't be skipped that create this long timeline that destroy the freshness or hurt the freshness that craft consumers crave. I always, again, this is my opinion here. I have a statement in the industry that nothing against craft people. It's kind of like an IPA beer, in my opinion. People want it for a reason to try new things. But what I see a lot is people tend to cater towards the stoner culture, the stoner stigma. Right. One of my statements in this space is in alcohol, you don't sell and market to alcoholics. You market to everybody else. So why in cannabis do we cater to the stoner culture, to the stoner mentality? Well, typically, in my opinion, it's just because they're the most vocal. They're the most willing to be negative about why it's not better than what they're getting on the illicit market. But if you ask any of them when the last time you purchased legal weed was, they'd say, oh, I bought it once or twice since legalization and I wasn't happy. I know a lot of my friends I fault them for this every time. I say, I work every day hard to put good legal weed out there and you still won't try it. Stop ragging the system.
That's a fair say, because you know what, like, comparing it to alcohol, like we all do and probably shouldn't, but you know what, there's not much else to compare it to. We need to figure out how to really build an audience for tomorrow, not yesterday, not in the past, how to build it and make it into an industry that's legitimate and legalization.
People want that safety factor. You buy it for the C of A. In alcohol, all bacteria is killed in the process because there's alcohol. Right. In cannabis, there isn't. So people who buy cannabis legally are buying it, A, for the quality in the product, but in my opinion, a lot of them buy it because they know it has a high level of safety factor. All your parents, all bad terminology, the soccer moms, all these segments really started shifting, and you started seeing this massive expansion of market bases and Prop 2.0 product demand from the people who were not stoners because of the safety factor involved. We've all had that chocolate bar where one corner gets you rocking off your butt and the other corner does nothing to you. Yeah. That safety factor is why people are really clamoring into the industry and promoting it.
Right. And obviously that voice isn't loud enough yet, or we would see some bigger changes go on. You're seeing a lot of larger LPs descale right now, and a lot of smaller craft growers looking to obviously produce more. A huge issue. So where do you see craft going, and where do you see the industry kind of shifting with flower?
Flower has always been at least one third of the market demand. Pre-legalization, I mean, it was the market demand because there was no 2.0. I firmly believe that flower will always be one third, if not more, of the market. I'm a flower consumer. I love it. I don't see it disappearing. The logistical requirements that we touched upon and some of the provincial requirements, I won't name any provinces, really preclude the small players from joining the game. I mean, you need a sales license, and then you need to have really heavy insurance that comes at huge premiums to sell into certain provinces. So it is really a cash flow issue that is coupled with logistical issue that prohibits a lot of craft cultivation and a lot of craft product from getting to the market. That's why you see certain brands are just like, let's say, a co-op of craft product, because they carry all these heavy costs and help sell mom and pop's products.
Yeah. So I guess what we're getting at is we hope obviously the quality keeps on getting better. And you know what? We beat out a lot of that noise, because I know there's a lot of noise in the industry, a lot of poor grown flower, just not what the consumer's looking for, not up to their standards. So I guess we're really just kind of hoping for that to wean itself out, let's call it. Let's jump into medical. I know you're a medical patient right now, and you've been on the medical side for a while, so you're pretty well versed probably. Are you currently purchasing on the medical prior to your tea break?
Yes, I always have, and I always will purchase medical. My insurance covers it. Oh, look at that. I get a tax break, and it's covered as a medical prescription drug. That's amazing. You know, the medical process tends to be ostracized by a lot of people. I talk to a lot of people who say, yeah, I walked into my doctor and said, I'd like to try medical cannabis. And they go, And, you know, in the end, they walked out saying, I don't know how to do it. Most doctors won't prescribe it because they don't know it. They're not comfortable. They haven't been educated. As a medical patient, every 6 to 9 months, I actually have to renew my prescription. In the 10 years I've had my license, I've probably 10, 12 years, I've probably gone through 20 different medical practitioners. I've had ones who say, well, you're consuming this for insomnia, so you can't have high THC product. I'm only going to prescribe you CBD. Oh man, did I let them have it from there. The doctors are not educated and aware because there hasn't been a platform for this. You really do kind of need a progressive doctor who recognizes the value and who wants to prescribe it and see people's lives change. And a lot of these doctors will say, yeah, you know, I had a patient who was on their cancerous deathbed and tried cannabis or tried something, and it cured or really alleviated an ailment. And so that is a kind of a shift there. It is very easy for someone to get their medical license, and it is free. There are certain online websites where you go in, you punch in your information. 2 weeks later, you have a Zoom call now. You don't even need to go into the office. And they say, why do you want cannabis? Well, you have five real options: pain, insomnia, anxiety, lack of appetite, or other. I checked like four of those boxes because I was in university at the time, right? It's quite an easy system. And then medical is great for the LP. They get more money because you're buying either directly from an LP, or there are some platforms now that are like Amazon of medical cannabis. You go on, everybody has their product there, and they ship to you. It's amazing because all of a sudden you're not at the mercy of what the province carries. Right. As a medical patient, I can buy product from a BC LP, from a Nova Scotia LP. So on a medical basis, you can ship across Canada and you have hopefully insurance savings. A lot of LPs on the medical platforms do offer price protection for people who have a lower income, for Veterans Affairs, for people at a disadvantage. So there are lots of quantifiable benefits to going medical.
kind of hit all the nails on the head there that I wanted to go over, the kind of retail versus online access. And I know there's limited retail access. Our friends over at Hybrid Farms are in Ottawa. And I know they're starting to spread out, but you don't see too much retail access for medical cannabis. And I think that's kind of the problem with the recreational space. There's just so much access of it now. And, you know, we're having to have some tough conversations. You know, a lot of people are hesitant to go the medical route that come into a recreational store. And we try to do our best to kind of navigate that conversation. And like you said, it's tough. And, you know, like it could be ostracized going that route. And we hope that we can normalize picking a route that's best for you.
So, I'll touch on one more point there. Until the government removes the $1 a gram excise tax on medical cannabis, there is no cost competitive advantage for a consumer or for an LP. Every gram you buy of dry flower, that LP pays $1 to the government for it in tax. It is the only prescription drug in Canada that is excise taxed.
Crazy. And how do we remove it? That's the question.
Well, right now, the only way you can remove it is if you have a DIN, a drug identification number that goes along with it. In order to get that, you need to do a clinical trial, which means you need to bring in a CRO, a contract research organization, who does a double control placebo washed line study. You have essentially 80 people, half of them on cannabis, the other half are not, they're not aware. You put them on, you monitor it. And then after X time frame, you switch the control group and the non-control group. You need a DIN in order to remove excise tax. The cost to do one of these studies starts at about $300,000. Why would an LP do it? If you succeed, you helped everybody else. If you fail, you shot yourself in the foot, burned a lot of money, and looked like an idiot doing it.
Interesting. Man, I could listen to you forever. You have such an abundance amount of knowledge about this stuff. And it's nice just to kind of really kind of skim through this and get down to that nitty gritty shake of the conversation of what needs to be done, or at least here's an option, right? But getting into that more health and wellness, red tape in the recreational space, a lot of people say recreational can be that quasi-medical conversation, right? So that health and wellness, you know, that everyday product that, you know, as a consumer, it's just something that they can incorporate. Firstly, what is a health and wellness product and how do we categorize it?
Health and wellness, that's about 50 fun questions rolled into one little painful ball for me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, here's a grenade. Health and wellness, realistically, look, everyone consumes cannabis for some medical benefit, whether it's sleep, whether it's relax, whether it's calming. It's what everyone consumes it for, something, for some effect that they go after. There are over 500 recognized molecules or active molecules in cannabis. THC and CBD are each one. There's over 100 active cannabinoids. So it's not THC that helps you. It's not CBD that helps you. It's the entourage effect, which is the arrangement of all these molecules, of these 500 plus molecules, and how they help you. It's kind of like your shotgun blast versus a rifle shot here, and just throwing spaghetti at a wall. Everybody reacts differently to different cannabinoids, to different terpene profiles, to different arrangement of molecules. So what works for you, I might not work for me. I love myrcene. I'm a very high myrcene person because I know that's something that's better for me. Whereas I react to pinene. Funny enough, I have pollen allergies and pine gets me. Who would have thought? So health and wellness, I believe that everyone consumes cannabis for the health and wellness effect. The red tape is that on the recreational front, you can't make any statements or convey anything health and wellness. On the medical front, you're still pretty much restricted on that, but you can provide marketing materials. You can email them. You can provide updates. You can directly reach out to your customer. And recreational, you cannot. So as a medical patient, I get free swag all the time in the boxes. And a lot of times there's emails. Oh, we're coming out with this. This is coming. It is right now, the red tape is on both sides of medical and recreational. It's just the medical has a better capabilities to directly reach the consumer and change that perception.
Right. So obviously there's a lot of red tape around these types of products and how we market it out to our customers and consumers. So what, in your opinion, from your point of view, what type of changes do you hope to see around that?
Starting on the logistical side here, if I'm an LP and I'm launching a product, I want it to be on recreational and medical. Why would I preclude one or the other when it's just a bigger customer market base? Right. So typically you see the same products on both. You might see a slight price break on the medical front for the medical patient. But again, they're still paying excise tax.
Right.
So there's a lot of differences there. Personally, I do believe that Health Canada hit it right from the beginning. A lot of people will hate me for this. I think they hit it right from the beginning. They said, we don't know how this works, the control, the differences, the risks. So we're going to set the bar here and we're going to slowly repeal it. And from the inside of the industry, you do see those thresholds, those levels change. You no longer need a high level vault, which would be, you know, a tenth of the cost to build a facility. On the consumer side, everyone talks about a 10 milligram limit on edibles. I do believe that will change the dry flower equivalency factor. Clearly somebody wasn't, you know, doing the math when they did that for beverages, because you can't have a 350, you can't do a six pack of beverages. These are things that are logical evolutions. I think it will change. It has to change. Consumers are demanding it. The industry is demanding it. But on the flip side, if you look at the US, how do you retroactively tell 50 different states who have all been operating independently, this is now your threshold? Some will have to go down and say, well, fine. Others will have to go up and essentially be put out of business. So I really do think that Health Canada and Canada, knowing we were the first real market to do this, hit it right, saying, we don't know. We're going to make it easier as you go along. Of course, I would love to see some of those changes go a little faster. But I mean, we're 4 years into legalization. We're not even 4 years. Like, come on, this is incredible what we've achieved. As a consumer, you can buy recreationally or medically. As an athlete, you can buy recreationally or medically. I recommend the medical path, because then all of a sudden you can get it prescribed through doctors, you have your insurances, all this fun stuff. And the moment the excise law changes, that will change the game completely for everybody and rewrite how the industry is played.
Yeah, you know what? It's so interesting that you say that, because like, we're in the industry, we're pushing, asking for change, demanding change, some of us. But meanwhile, you know, people that aren't in this industry, that are kind of the outsiders kind of looking in, they're like, wow, look at the changes in the last 3 to 4 years, right?
Exactly. To that point, you know, I don't know if there's a long-term home for me in the industry, because when I started this, to your early questions, you know, it was transitioning that traditional knowledge into something that goes on paper and comes with science. And then all of a sudden you see the business evolution, you see everyone coming in it for a dollar to make money. And now we're really seeing that CPG and the consumer scientific demand. You're seeing products and companies come out with identities. There hasn't been really brand loyalty, in my opinion, in the industry. I think it's coming now, because there's more product loyalty based on what's there, what's consistently there, and how it helps people. Right. So I do see my lifespan, my life cycle in this industry reaching its end in the near future, just because of this, because, you know, I've pushed so many boundaries for myself and some of the companies I've been with, that at this point, there are plenty of people like yourself and like myself who really have that mission, that drive to change it for the better and continue that change. And right. I'm very proud of what I've done, and that I can go to stores and people still pitch me the same flower from 7 years ago.
Let's jump into kind of my favorite topics, just like the sports side, the athlete, you know, what this is about. You know, I really think that athletes can really drive this industry forward, and allowing some of our idols, our celebrities, our people that, you know, as a kid and an athlete growing up, you really look up to these people on these leagues and just, wow, this is a profession. You can play this sport and make a paycheck. And I just think this can be a huge ripple effect. So let's dive into this. Why is cannabis not recognized as a recovery drug in sport?
Do you want the short answer or the long answer? I mean, it's a Schedule I narcotic with the U.S. system, which means it's technically worse than cocaine by the schedule. It's because it's a psychoactive. Anything psychoactive starting back, you know, in the early 70s was classified, misnomered as this war on drugs. That's THC. CBD is not a psychoactive. So we're seeing a lot of evolution and absorption of CBD into the marketplace. CBD pet products. I give my dogs CBD oil all the time, especially in thunderstorms. Helps incredibly. I truly believe that athletes, I don't think there's going to be a catered line to athletes. I think the athletes actually have to carve their own way by saying, this is what helps me. Because to our earlier conversation on clinical trials and DINs and research groups, until people push the agenda and say, this is what helps me. And there's essentially this playbook of terpenes, profiles, and cannabinoids to what helps what, we're not going to see too much of a change. I could also say, what is the difference between an athlete using this as a recovery and a mother with four children who are crying all night and she just wants to go to bed? There's a massive difference in what they do and what their bodies are looking for, but the end result is pretty much the same because they're getting what they're going after.
Right.
I do see the athlete area picking up drastically. I believe it needs to pick up drastically. I still love to consume after sports, before sports, if I'm not driving. It's just such an aid and really calms and focuses people in a lot of what they want to do. So I do see that drive, that push, that need for evolution. I think the athletes have to push it further. And the biggest guidance I can give is medical prescriptions, gentlemen and ladies, and everyone else. I mean, it will change. And the more we change it, the more we push for it, the more it will happen.
I think a lot of athletes, even my time down at Brock, a lot of athletes do consume cannabis, but they won't have a conversation about it. So I hope a lot of them start gathering up in groups and having these conversations and talking about them in a more educational way to see how they can really benefit them as a person and as an athlete. But going into your focus for the rest of the year, what does that look like personally and professionally?
Currently, I'm working on advancing the hardware in the industry, providing something that really showcases different products out there in terms of, just availability and cross functionalities. I don't know. In the long run, I don't know where this industry will take me. If I want to stay in it forever, I think I'm a little burnt out of the space. I may never leave. Maybe I leave. I don't know.
We'll always be talking about weed nonetheless. All right. Looking back, talk to us about either a piece of technology, a book, or a moment that changed your life or made you who you are today.
So I actually have a pretty crippling fear of heights. I have for a long time. It's gotten progressively worse in the last 10 years. About 2 years ago, 3 years ago now, I guess, I was referred to this TED Talk, and it's actually Chris Hadfield, the former Canadian astronaut, former astronaut who's Canadian, there we go, who did the drop from space. So he does a TED Talk. I highly recommend it to everybody, entitled What is Fear? And he sits there and he goes, the scaredest I've ever been in my life was when I was strapped to a rocket and I heard 10, 9, 8, knowing that the moment they get to one, there's a 20% chance I'm dead. He said, fear is based on your perception. So you can always push yourself to get over it, not just by saying I'm going to get over it, but by doing that thing that makes you afraid. I took a lot of airplane rides and I still do, and it still scares me shitless, but I'm getting better with it. It has gotten better, especially since that video. I highly recommend it for people. What is Fear by Chris Hadfield.
Thank you, Gabe, for joining us on the Shake Podcast powered by Sports Cannabis. Tune in next week at 8 a.m. for another episode, and make sure to follow us on Instagram at The Shake Podcast or check us out on www.sportscannabis.ca. I'm your host, Ryan Purvis, and we hope you have a very green week.